Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specing, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. We're going to be doing a recorded hour tonight for the live show, so lots of time for your questions and answers. If you're listening to us online and you want to join the live call, pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1, and Lisa will get to your call. And right now, the lines are wide open. So I say this every time, and it happens every time. If you get in right now, we've got plenty of room for questions. By the time we get to the end of the show, it starts to fill up, and I end up leaving people holding. So press 1 right now with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, and we will get to those here in just a second. Again, it's a recorded hour. Open lines, anything you want to talk about, anything you want to ask, press 1 on your phone right now. And we're going to get started on that here in just a minute. But I'll tell you, we are traveling west. And once you get into Texas, we have to plan carefully. We need a lot of internet bandwidth in order to be able to do the show. We have our satellite, which we know we can get anywhere. But we also need at least 2 really strong 3G signals, and I'd really like to have 3. And you have to pick carefully out here. We left San Antonio this morning, this afternoon, I guess, and I started looking before we left, and it was either Fort Stockton or El Paso, and that was about it, all the way across the rest of the state. And we had to stop in Fort Stockton because we didn't have time to make it to El Paso and still get set up. And I think we're pushing the limits right now. We're a little short on bandwidth. I think we're going to be just fine, though. So join us, will you? If you're listening to us online, there are still some lines. They're starting to fill up now. 347-884-8327 is the live call. Once you're on that call, press 1, and we will get to those calls here in just a minute. We're going to go ahead and start recording for the live show right now. Let's go ahead and get that started. Good evening, and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford, and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. Also a new website to check out now. We have updated fuel gauges to fuel gauges 2.0, and we've made it free. Not just a free trial, free forever. Check it out at mygauges.com. Absolutely the best way to track and learn about your fuel mileage as well as all of the other trucks in the system. Let's get right to some phone calls tonight. Let's see. Let's start off in Kansas. Jason, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What can I help you with tonight?
Well, I've got a Freightliner Classic with the Detroit in it. It's a 2007.
Okay.
And the fuel mileage is just all over the place with this thing. I drive it between, 57 to 64 mile an hour. I pull a reefer with it. And I fueled up last night, and I was 3.99 with it.
3.99?
Yes.
Wow. You're gonna have to pull a second trailer in order to solve this problem.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're gonna have to pull a trailer full of money.
Yeah. But I haven't been over 5.2 since probably back in December.
And, wow. We know. What part of the country are you running in?
We just run from Kansas to Colorado and back into Kansas.
Well, we know that the weather's affecting you. And we would expect that you could lose a full mile per gallon. And sometimes in the extreme across, the plains out there when the wind gets whipping and it's, 5 degrees, maybe even a mile and a half. But 3.99, something is really wrong.
Yeah,
I mean, when I first got the truck.
Well, it was a fleet truck when I got it. It's got the Detroit 13 speed, and I believe they're 358s, and it's low pro 22 inch tires on it.
Okay. How long have you had it?
I bought it back in May. I've put about 92,000 miles on it.
What's the best fuel economy you for an extended period, for a week or two, or, what's the best average you think you've gotten out of this?
Probably 5.5. Wow. 5.5, 5, somewhere in there.
Yeah, even that'll kill you. I mean, 5.5, we would want that to be our low number, not our high number.
Yeah.
How many miles are on the truck?
It's got about 567 on it now.
Okay.
567,000.
What kind of maintenance have you put into the truck since you've had it?
EGR valve, turbo actuator, overhead, just the normal oil changes and grease jobs and...
Okay, but we have had EGR-related problems then. We've had a valve and an actuator done, right?
Yeah, and that's the funny thing is when I first got the truck, it would, if you were below 1,400 RPM, it would cut in and out like turning the light switch on and off. The motor would just shut off and then kick right back on. I was getting 6 miles a gallon when it was doing that. And then we get the cutting out problem fixed, and they retimed the turbo and the actuator valve and EGR, and it's been in the toilet ever since.
So my guess is, and with EGR engines, we're only guessing, but it sounds like we've got an EGR-related problem. I mean, I don't know that I would be looking anywhere else. If you haven't tested the charger cooler, I would always do that just to check, just to make sure that we don't have that compounding the problem. That's not the whole problem. Even if you had a blown charger cooler that wasn't holding any pressure, it wouldn't affect your fuel economy this bad. So there's something else going on, but we still want to check it just to make sure we don't have that compounding the problem as well. When you had the overhead done, who did it?
Freightliner shop out here in central Kansas.
Okay, I would get this into a Detroit shop. Skip Freightliner. Let Detroit, if you could find one that had a dyno, that would be my preference. If we could get this on the dyno and see what kind of horsepower we're putting to the ground, I have a feeling this just isn't a healthy engine. And I would also get a full-service oil sample done.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, the motor, it doesn't seem like it runs like it should. It feels weak.
Yeah, don't spend a penny on any aftermarket or modification trying to get this better, because this isn't healthy to begin with. And I hate to modify an engine that's not running right, because all we start to do sometimes is just cover stuff up. And ultimately, we might be wasting money, because this could turn out to be a truck you just need to get rid of. I know you probably hate to hear that when you haven't even had it a year, but you can't afford with, the, you know, the predictions are that fuel is going to probably average $3.40 a gallon for this year. Now, as long as nothing unusual happens, their predictions are usually pretty close on those fuel price numbers. Their record isn't all that bad. So I would tend to believe that we're going to stay north of $3 a gallon this year, and you can't afford it. At 5.5 being the high side, you lose money every time fuel goes up, and when you're down in the fours, you lose a lot of money when fuel goes up. So you've got to, before you spend any money on anything, we've just got to get this thing in. Dyno, I would probably let Detroit get back into the overhead on it and see, just to make sure that was all done right. They're going to have to check the EGR system and an oil sample to see if maybe we've got bad injectors or something like that, and then let's go from there.
Well, and today I heard some guys talking about they unplugged the wires from the EGR valve.
Yeah, we can't do that either. We've had some limited luck with that kind of stuff on the ISX mostly. On the Detroit, if all you do is unplug the EGR, the engine's going to derate and you're just going to compound the problems.
Okay. All righty. Well, we got a dyno about 80 miles from where I live, so I guess we'll start there.
Yeah, what's the rated horsepower on this? 515?
Yeah, it's 515.
Okay. We would expect, one of the things that we want to look for when we've got it on the dyno is, at a minimum on this engine, we want to see 80% of rated horsepower. That's the bottom end. That's about 412 horsepower to the wheels. Anything less than that and something is wrong with this engine. That's really one of the things we're looking for. How about oil consumption?
It doesn't use a drop.
Okay, so we know we've got, yeah, my guess is we could possibly have some injector issues, but we need to be looking at that EGR system pretty close. So let's check horsepower, let's check oil analysis to see if we've got something going on in there that we can identify, and then let's go from there, because that is just not working the way we want it to work. And my fear is, if it's EGR, and it's very possible that it is, I mean, that is what all the indications are saying right now, I'm not sure where to go other than hope that you've got a good Detroit shop and they can identify what the EGR-related problem is, and we don't spend a whole bunch of money and not get this thing fixed. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog Sirius 147 XM171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. Fuel Gauges 2.0 is live and free, and that's mygauges.com. Check that out. The absolute best way to track and learn about your fuel economy, and now it is completely free, mygauges.com. You know, this is something we have to be very, very careful about it in today's world when we buy a truck. Fuel economy has got to be a big priority. Unless you're independently wealthy, unless you're already established as an owner-operator and you know you've got high rates and you can handle that kind of fuel cost, and even then, I don't know why you wouldn't want to get the very best fuel economy you could possibly get. Just because there's so much money to be made by getting really good fuel economy. But we have to be really careful when we buy a truck. Obviously, starting with a classic, we know we've got a problem. When we get a classic with an EGR engine, we know we've got another problem. And unfortunately, it can be really, in today's world, it can be enough to just about put you out of business. Let's go to Matt in Fort Worth. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing good this evening. What's on your mind?
I got two things for you. I just want to comment. You had a guest on yesterday from FAS, and
yeah.
I went ahead and installed the FAS system on my 98 International DDEC3. And, you know, I'm pretty impressed with it. I like that, and but I only had it for 15 days, and my cruise control quit working, so I haven't been able to get in to get that taken care of as far as a fuel mileage basis. But as far as a little extra pep on the hill and a little better performance, I definitely can tell that. So,
yeah, that's one of the modifications that people seem to notice right away in the pedal and in driving and idling, and you pick up on some of those things right away. This is just a lousy time of the year to be trying fuel economy. You know, I watch my fuel economy really closely. I mean, not only tank to tank with notes in you know, fuel gauges, and I, you know, note the weather and wind conditions and road conditions and all those other things, but I also monitor, you know, real time going down the road with an instant read fuel mileage gauge and the pyrometer and the turbo boost. And, you know, coming into West Texas, I noticed a pretty solid 0.4 mph drop. Just because two things I think that will account for it is we picked up a really strong crosswind all day long, and the road surface out here is a rough chip and seal blacktop.
Yeah. And it's like, and that all over Texas.
Yeah, that stuff's horrible for fuel economy.
Yeah, it's like when you go from Houston to Laredo, it's like that, and it just kills my mileage. You know, we're talking down into the fives, you know.
Yeah, I read in one of the studies on fuel economy that the difference in rolling resistance on different road surfaces is 30%.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like when you come on the blacktop right there and then you come into the nice, smooth concrete, I mean, it's just,
right.
you can tell the difference instantly. And so
I was really watching it today. I can hear it and I can see it in the turbo boost gauge. There's that much of a difference. Yeah.
And, I have one more question for you. Real quick here, it's about money. It's a little on the personal side, not too personal, but I recently got married here last May, and me and my wife have two houses, and you know, her house is good and everything. It, you know, doesn't owe any money or anything, and you know, I still have the mortgage on my place, and I have some land and stuff like that, so it makes my life real convenient. And I'm able to park the truck there and do this and do that. But, I'm thinking about a business and, you know, a personal wealth decision. And I'm really considering if I sell my house and, you know, because my wife has a house already, that I would be able to be debt-free with my wife, and we, you know, the business would be debt-free, and, you know, but yet there would still be some sacrifice. You know, I'd have to find another place to park the truck and yada, yada. You kind of see the picture.
Right.
And I'm
Here's the other thing that I would consider. What part of the country is that house? Where is it?
It's just south of Fort Worth there.
What is the real estate market like here in Texas? I think this is one of the better markets in the country right now.
It is one of the better markets right now. And see, I'm not in a really big hurry to sell. I mean, I could wait another year or so if you know, for the market to come back. But, you know, I'm also looking at if I start making money and I don't have any deductions, is that really going to, as far as the tax reason, is that going to...
Don't worry about that. Yeah,
okay.
Don't worry about that. There are factors, and we want to look at all the factors, but forget that one. House really isn't a tax deduction. As much as they'd like us to believe that, it's really not. The amount of money we have to put up to keep up the house doesn't come anywhere near being offset by the little bit of tax deduction we get on real estate tax and mortgage interest. So the factors really come down to two, in my opinion, for the most part. Personal convenience, like you said, it's nice having it. It's a place to park the truck. That's worth something, so you have to factor that in. The next factor is timing. And, you know, where the market really is and will it come back. And at some point, the house is probably going to be worth more than it is right now. But when is that going to be? I would say that if you make the decision to sell it, you're in a good position in that you're not in a hurry. So you can price yourself at the top side of the market and just wait. And when you do get what you want, that's fantastic. So, you know, you don't have to accept anything less than what you want.
Exactly. That's kind of what I was considering. And I'm right there off a main highway, a 4-lane highway, and I've commercial businesses on both sides of my property. I'm kind of like in a horseshoe, if you know what I mean.
You know what? I would talk to an agent, and I would find out what the market's doing, and I would price that thing on the high side of the market and just sit back and wait.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your opinion, and, you know, it really helps me out a lot. So.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's squeeze in another one before we've got to get to a break. Let's go to South Carolina. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Got a question about APUs. You've been talking about the battery-based APU here recently, and I was wondering about the life of it in terms of a life cycle before it has to be, the batteries have to be regenerated to provide another cycle of use for you. I've got a tri-pack unit in my current company tractor, and I can put it in a null position, and it will keep my batteries charged indefinitely. I could let my tractor sit for 2 weeks. Temperatures could go sub-zero, which I've seen here recently, and I don't have to worry about coming back to a truck. It's not going to start because I've got bad batteries. And most of what I've read in the literature is these battery-based systems don't have that long of a life. Typically, you can run at least one 10-hour period without the batteries having to be regenerated. And I'm just wondering, in a scenario where I parked my truck for a long weekend and I had to deal with sub-zero temperatures, am I going to come back to a truck that most likely has dead batteries because I haven't been able to run the engine based on where I park it?
Well,
because I park my truck about 30 miles away from my home.
Well, when you say you park the truck and you leave it, now this tri-pack is a diesel system, right?
Correct. It's got a little Yanmar diesel. It's fueled off of my own fuel tank. So as long as I've got fuel in my tanks, it'll run indefinitely.
Yeah, but why would we want it running when you're going to be leaving it for days at a time?
Well, for one thing, when the temperatures go down, those batteries are going to suffer prior to having an APU unit on my tractor, my experience, I've only been driving 10 years, but if I left the tractor for 2 or 3 days and I had sub-zero temperatures, I came back to a truck with dead batteries.
Yeah.
Even when the batteries were fresh.
Hold on a second, because I do want to address this. I've got to get to a break. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to come back to this right after the break, so stick around. All right. I've got to get to a break. We've got more stuff coming, though. Don't go away. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com, and let's get right back to that call. Before the break, I was talking with Mike in South Carolina. A couple things that I want to go over here, Mike. If we have good batteries and we don't have any unusual draw on that battery, then even in really cold temperature, there's no way we should have dead batteries in 2 or 3 days. Now, we need to make sure we don't have things like inverters that are turned on or refrigerators that are drawing power constantly. We might need to do an electrical system test to see if we have some kind of draw, because you really shouldn't be able to kill batteries in a couple days if there's no draw on them, even in really cold temperatures. Now, having said that, the battery APU system has actually some ways to protect against that. For one thing, you're going to have a second set of batteries, of deep cycle glass mat batteries, on top of the 4 lead acid cold cranking batteries you already have in the system. And if where you park the truck, is there any ability to plug in?
No, absolutely none. It's parked at the facility that I'm dedicated to. And the other thing is when it is cold, when my APU is running to make sure my batteries don't reach a point beyond which they can't recover, it's also keeping my engine and my fuel warm so that I don't have to worry about gelling problems with my fuel. And my engine is getting enough heat to sort of protect it from the really bad cold that you can run into.
Well, now, this system, the real limitation on an electric system is not in the cold weather, it's in the hot weather. If we're trying to run air conditioning, we're limited to about 12 hours of runtime. Air conditioning takes a lot of juice, and 12 hours is good, really. Many of the systems won't go that long. But on the heating side, I would have to check the time. But on the heating side, it runs a small diesel-fired heater that will do the same thing, keep the engine and the coolant warm, and the batteries are going to last a lot longer under that system. I would have to check the time, but I think for a long weekend, you would even be fine as far as that goes.
Yeah. The other concern I had was I have set at a shipper and mix up in load assignments and all, and had to sit there for 24 or 36 hours occasionally. I mean, that's the exception to the rule, but if you're sitting in a state where you're not allowed to idle and you've run that air conditioning for 10 or 12 hours and then you've got to crank your engine to get those batteries charged up, how do you do that if you're stuck someplace for 24 to 36 hours at a shipper's location and you're in one of those states where you can idle?
Well, now you threw two factors in there. If it's the exception to the rule, and most of the time it is, then, yeah, after our 12 hours, fire it up and run the truck. And if it happens once in a while, no big deal. I don't want to buy an APU to cover the exception. I want to buy an APU that performs well for the majority of the time. Now, when you throw in the idea that I can't idle the truck, and
right.
You know, how often is that happening on the road? I don't know. In that case, you're stuck. I mean, if you can't idle the truck, then you can't idle the truck. But I don't know what people are doing without an APU, period, in that situation.
They suffer, because when I first started driving, I was in that scenario, and it's ungodly in the summer and unbearable in the winter.
Yeah, in that case, then, yes, you have to have a diesel-fired APU. I don't know how often that happened. And for me, and again, I know this doesn't cover every situation, but if I know I'm in that situation, if I know I'm going to be there 24, 36 hours, the trailer's getting dropped and I'm going to a hotel. I mean, I don't want to run an APU and sit in the truck 36 hours no matter what.
Yeah.
So, yes,
that is an option.
With a battery system, we will at some point run into a case where we need to do something else. But everybody without an APU runs into that same situation. And if it happens a lot in your operation, then yes, skip the battery systems, go with the diesel-fired APU. But I'm still leaning towards the battery systems heading into the future. They're not perfect yet, but this one is better than most that I've seen. Let's go to California. Alec, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you? Oh, there you
doing
go.
Good.
Kevin, I'm practicing what you preach. I'm driving 58 miles an hour, and I don't idle.
Okay.
But the problem I'm having is when I wake up in the morning in some of these colder climates, the low-voltage battery alarm on my truck is shutting off my funk heater and those sorts of things in order to protect the battery. I've had my bunk heater fixed, I replaced the batteries, and just the other day, they found out that the alternator was faulty, only putting out 1.2 volts.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, if I have a bad alternator, and I understand you've had some recent experience with this, would you still be getting some sort of a drawdown on the batteries with a bad alternator?
Yeah, the problem with a bad alternator is if it's intermittent or if it's not charging properly, the batteries will work, but they won't work properly, and they'll get worse over time. The alternators on our trucks aren't all that great for charging batteries anyway, and that's why when we go to the all-electric systems, like we were just talking about with the APUs, and we put in the deep cycle glass mat batteries, a lot of people are wiping out those batteries in 12 or 18 months. And the problem is even a fully functioning alternator isn't charging those batteries the way they need to be charged. The electric system we're looking at allows you to plug the truck in with shore power, and when you do that, the more often you can do that, the longer the batteries are going to last, because it's designed to charge the batteries properly and condition them. And a lot of times we don't get that. It doesn't hurt. You know, you can buy a fairly inexpensive battery charger, and it doesn't hurt once in a while to throw that charger on when you're someplace you can plug it in. You get a better charge from one of those, and they kind of condition the batteries. But if the alternator is bad, you're really going to have problems like you're seeing. get the alternator fixed, get the electrical system tested to see if we have anything else drawing that shouldn't be, and that should take care of this.
Perfect. All right, well, thank you very much, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You know, that's one of the things that we are going to start testing for at Truck City Service. And one of my goals at Truck City Service is to really develop good diagnostic testing. I just don't see enough of it going on in the industry. What we tend to do is wait for something to break, find somebody who can fix it, and head on down the road after it breaks. I want to be able to diagnose on a regular basis. Every truck that comes in for any kind of work, we diagnose all the systems then and head off the problems. And the electrical system is one. We're working on it right now. I mean, we can do some pretty good diagnostics, but I want to be able to do better. Kind of like the smoke test we developed on the Charger cooler. We made it so easy to test that literally we can test the truck every time it comes in. We want to test ride height, check alignment, and be able to do those things quickly and easily so that we can keep the cost down so that it's something we can do on a regular basis. And the electrical system is another one. If we don't catch a problem, and sometimes it's a very simple problem, an alternator just not putting out the kind of juice it needs to put out, what happens is we don't notice that right away. And it's one of those things that you come out once and the truck's been sitting and now your batteries are dead. You think, well, it was cold or I let it sit too long. So we jump it and then everything's okay. And a week later it happens again. And by the time we get it all figured out, we've wiped out a set of batteries. Batteries will only last so long when they're not being charged properly. So we need to really do a better job of diagnosing those kind of systems, and it will save us a bunch of money in the long run. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com and also now mygauges.com. Fuel Gauges 2.0, the best fuel mileage tracking program anywhere, and now it's free. Check it out, mygauges.com. Let's get back to some phone calls. We are off to Wisconsin. Matt, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Kevin.
Good evening. What's on your mind tonight?
I'll start with last week I had a call about mechanical engines and cruise control.
Yes, I remember.
And I had on my 94 with a cat that was mechanical a device called a King Cruise. It's, I believe, King Controls is who makes it. They also
That's the one I was trying to think of. That's the one that Bruce has in the T600 of his that I borrowed. That's the same system he has on his with a mechanical Cummins.
Yep. Looking, it is the website is cruisecontrolking.com.
They're
actually
so they're
based
still
out
around,
of Minnesota.
Huh?
Yep. They make quite a few different products. They make that ViewCube, the automatic satellite tracking.
Oh, really?
RVs or trucks,
huh.
Yep. So
yeah.
They're,
okay.
Whether or not they're still making the cruise control, I don't know, but they're the ones that used to make it.
Got it. Okay. You know, like I said, I borrowed that truck from Bruce, and it's a really hot big cam Cummins. I have no idea how much horsepower it's putting out, but it's hot. You can roll a lot of black smoke out of that thing if you really get into the throttle. And the first time I'm driving it, I'm heading down the road, and I see this cruise control. And, you know, Bruce had gone over everything in the truck, but we hadn't talked about the cruise control. And I looked down, and I kind of remembered them from my days with mechanical engines. So I'm kind of playing around with it, and I can't get it to work. I mean, it just wouldn't set the speed. You would set it the way you wanted it, and it just wouldn't hold the speed. It was like it wasn't working at all. So I'm kind of playing around with it. It also had a resume button on it. So I figured out that the cruise wouldn't work. It wouldn't set the speed. I hit the resume button, and that thing went full throttle. Talk about a moment of panic. I grabbed the clutch and the brake, and it kicked back off. But I thought, wow, that could have gotten ugly.
Yeah, that's the way they worked. Is you know, in a mechanical engine, it was actually a cable hooked to the throttle. So, I mean, when it pulled on the throttle, the foot feed went to the floor, too. But, yeah, it's an actual dial where you actually set the speed on that dial, and you press the button.
Right. And it kind of holds the throttle in that position, right?
Well, no, it wasn't like a throttle lock. It actually had the computer that, you know, went with the speed. So.
Okay. Yeah, boy.
Yeah,
when this one took off, the pedal went to the floor, and I thought, wow, that could have gotten ugly.
Yeah, the dial turned too far.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't set. You know, you couldn't set it. You turn the dial where you wanted it, it just wouldn't set the speed. When I hit resume, it certainly tried to.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to hit the resume to actually turn it on, if I remember right. It's been quite a few years, so.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, well, after that, I stopped playing around with it.
Yeah, well, you got to have toys. I just finished up the book by Thomas Friedman about the name of the book is Hot, Flat, and Crowded.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, I've stated before, you know, I'm kind of on the fence with the whole climate change issue. I'm not.
Right.
I don't believe the sky is falling. I don't believe, you know, our planet's going to explode anytime soon. But I am a true conservative that I think we should conserve our natural resources and, you know, do what we can. And the book didn't persuade me much one way or the other. It gave me some new ideas.
Right.
From his other books, The World is Flat and all that, never realized how much of a liberal he is.
Yeah, you really don't. His other book was The Lexus and the Olive Tree, I think.
Yep.
From that and The World is Flat, you don't get the feeling that he's really a liberal at all. I didn't.
No. There's a few hints in there, you know, but this book, he shows it a lot more. I mean, he does state several times that it's, you know, capitalism and the free market that's going to have the ultimate effect. So,
well, you know, there are some people who are, and he may be more of a libertarian when it comes right down to it. I mean, there are people who are more liberal leaning when it comes to social issues, and more free market capitalist when it comes to economic issues, and it's kind of hard to put them into a political category.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, like, you know, there's a group of Democrats that call themselves Blue Dogs.
Right.
That I could fit in with that group real easy.
Right. They
on some
they
issues.
Do, you know, and I tend to be a little more middle of the road, even Democratic on local issues. I think we should have more local government and less national government. And you know, I can see that on in a smaller government setting, and I'm really libertarian, not you know, true right wing conservative. I in on a lot of social issues, I am more libertarian. I think we should have freedom, and I think we should be able to do, you know, for the most part, whatever we want to do, as long as we're not hurting somebody else. I in no way want to control anybody else's behavior unless it negatively affects me, in that they're doing something that's harming other people.
Mm-hmm. One of the themes in the book, this isn't stated in the book, but this is what I got out of it. It actually states that our tax system is part of the biggest problem. And the way he explained things, all I could think about was a fair tax.
Yeah.
Would actually help our climate problems.
Boy, I could see that. I mean, look at the mess we make with our stupid tax credits.
It's lobbyists. They're the biggest problems with our climate problem, you know. It's who has the most money can persuade Congress to, you know, do whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'd like to read it. I really liked his point of view in the other two books. And
yeah.
And I didn't get a political sense from him either way in the other two books. I certainly got his sense of fiscal policy, and it really sounded to me like he was pretty well in favor of the free market.
Yeah. It is a good book. I mean, I would recommend it. There's going to be some parts in there that you strongly disagree with, but then,
you know,
there's a lot of parts where there's great ideas.
Right.
That, you know, capitalism is going to solve.
Right. And, you know, I don't mind hearing the other side of things, that even if I strongly disagree with it, it makes me think.
Yep. Yeah, and that this book will definitely make you do that.
Yeah, and I like that. So I will get that. And I think sometimes his books at certain points get a little dry, and they can be tough to listen to. But overall, I've really learned a lot from his books.
Yeah, because it's, I'm not sure, but it's probably a 20-hour book.
Yeah, yeah.
It's most of his are pretty long, but he jumps around enough, and it, you know, his experience across the world is amazing, which
it,
you know,
really
gives
is.
Him a lot of credibility to what he's talking about.
Right. Yeah. No, I will put that one on my list. In fact, maybe I'll even get that, start listening tomorrow, because we still have some driving to do out here in Texas.
Yeah, it's great for the wide open plains.
Yeah, we had plenty of that today, and we've got, I don't know, maybe 4 hours to El Paso now. It's not that far, but I had to pick and choose carefully, you know, and plan the day where we were going to stop, because if you get past Fort Stockton, you've got a long way to another cell phone signal.
Yeah, I haven't been out there in years, but it's pretty undeveloped in spots.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, cell phone coverage for just the phone wasn't bad on the interstate, but we need a good, strong 3G signal, and it's non-existent out here.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to do it. I appreciate the book review and the recommendation. I'm going to get that one. It sounds good. We're all out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining me. Be sure to tune in every night, midnight Eastern time, as well as every weekend, Saturday and Sunday afternoon, 4 to 7 p.m. We're right here on the Road Dog, Sirius 147 XM 171. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.